Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 7th, 2022, weekend edition. No record low jobless rates for the area. By Mella McEwen. Soaring crude prices have traditionally led to Midland reporting record low unemployment rates. When crude prices previously reached triple digits and remained strong, unemployment in Midland was the lowest in the state for several years. In fact, unemployment reached a low of 1.7% in July 2019 before beginning to inch higher as oil field activity slowed. Still, the rate remained the state's lowest at just over 2.3% before the pandemic hit in 2020. Crude prices are again in triple digits and natural gas prices have soared to 14-year highs, but there has not been a corresponding drop in the unemployment rate, which was 3.5% in March. We've seen the rush to drill wells in this environment has been calmer than in previous eras of high oil prices, Steve Beach, dean of the College of Business at the University of Texas Permian Basin, told the Reporter Telegram. Most of us have heard about the cautious approach by the energy majors to aggressively start drilling again. While they are clearly not the only players in the region, their caution is still a big impact. Labor market analysts with the Texas Workforce Commission told the Reporter Telegram there's certainly a relation between the price of West Texas Intermediate and a number of labor market metrics, including industry employment and the employment rate. WTI has surged 74% since last March. The March Texas rig count was 319. In higher than March 2021. Statewide there were 959,000 mining and construction jobs. There were 32,000 mining, logging, construction jobs being worked in the Midland metropolitan area. The Midland MSA unemployment in March was 3.5%, a 3.2% decrease from March 2021. Midland unemployment may not be as low as pre-COVID levels, the analyst said, but the statistics are trending in a good news direction. The growing rig count in the Permian Basin means job growth, said Mickey Cargill. In an email to the Reporter Telegram, he noted 1,000 jobs have been created in the last month and 6,900 jobs created over the last year. With the infrastructure of drilling at or near capacity, I expect job growth to slow but not decline. The employment rate will have difficulty falling below 2.7%, but improvement should continue in the near term. Economist Ray Perryman sees a few factors impacting Midland's labor market. When the pandemic began and prices started falling, a large number of wells that were completed were not brought into production. As a result, when prices began to go up, the initial round of production increases could occur without a great deal of hiring. Secondly, he continued, in the prior spurt of drilling, most of the production profits were plowed back into drilling and investor returns compared to other alternatives. When combined with the uncertainty over future federal policy on drilling, pipelines, and ports, this created a difficult environment to raise capital for major drilling programs, particularly for small and mid-sized firms that often are the first movers. Finally, the oil and gas industry and other local sectors are suffering from the same supply chain and workforce issues that plague other parts of the economy. Like the TWC labor market analyst, he sees trends going in a positive direction. It appears that the Ukrainian situation has escalated interest. Drilling permits set an all-time record in March, and the situation should be improving soon. Beach of UTPB says the current labor market has impacted by skills, mismatches, transitions, and returning to the workforce. For the Texas Permian Basin, the annual gap jobs to available workers is large in certain areas. Accountants, financial managers, petro engineers, for example. So it is not just for all positions. It's in the same rows. It's in some of the rows for highly trained workers and other very specific roles. Welders and truck drivers are needed and could be employed if they want. If we had more living out here, they could just walk into the job. But if they worked in the oil industry recently and lost their jobs, they may just be willing to stay home in Fort Worth or San Antonio and work there, where there are plenty of jobs, too. Finally, he said some part of just the mechanics of calculation of the employment rate. He explained that the calculation for the unemployment rate uses both the number of unemployed and the number of individuals in the civilian labor force, those employed or looking. From December to February, Midland's labor force increased by 3,600 individuals. The statistics showed 3.37 more people had jobs, but the increase in individuals seeking employment led to an increase of 311 unemployed workers. So the unemployment rate went up modestly, but a lot more people are working, and we see the return to the job market in the wake of the pandemic is picking up. Since February 2021, Midland has over 11,000 additional employed workers and a reduction of more than 3,500 as unemployed. Thus, work is picking up, available workers are increasing, and unemployed workers are falling in number. Over the year, unemployment fell from 8.2% to 4.3%. That 4.3% number is actually below most estimates of a natural rate of employment, 4.5% and a bit higher, which may account for the transition time for individuals making career job changes. Nicholas delivers good news. Midland's Martin Nicholas remembers the first time he visited a prison and hearing the door lock behind him. Even a prison ministry volunteer can get nervous. You give up your freedom if you just for a short time once inside. But the founder of Nicholas Consulting Group found a cause he believes in. That's why, 7 years after his first experience, he makes the trip to Lynah Unit in Fort Stockton twice a week as a representative of Kairos Prison Ministry. There's nothing in the Bible that says some need a little Jesus and others need more Jesus, Nicholas wrote. It is also important to note that some of the incarcerated men will never be released from prison. They're just as worthy and maybe more needy for the good news. The following is a question and answer with Nicholas, who was born in Midland, attended Lee High School, and earned engineering degrees from the University of Texas. I don't think anyone is attracted to prison ministry unless they have been affected by incarceration. Several friends were involved with Kairos, and they spoke highly about their experiences. Those people included Dr. Gene Spires, Dave Percy, Robert Winkler, Harold Howard, Roy Nelson, and Sue Hanneman. I was already involved with multiple nonprofit boards and put them off, claiming I didn't have time. Looking back, it's clear that God had a plan. First Baptist Church in Midland had a bus taking people to the Kairos closing ceremony at the Lynah Unit in Fort Stockton. I decided to join the group. Roy Nelson was on that bus and talked about his experiences inside the prison. You realize it's a two-hour trip from Midland to the prison. Roy talked about his experiences and the impact Kairos made on the inside. This got me thinking more about what Christ calls us to do. It was a call to get out of the pew and go to work. I was a little nervous on the first visit. It was a completely new experience going through security, being searched, and having the doors locked behind you. You give up your freedom, if just for a short time, once inside. My knowledge was based on what we see in movies and drama documentaries. In so many ways, we tend to think of the world around us in terms of us and them. It's easy to classify people inside prison, where all the inmates wear white and free world volunteers don't. I'm comfortable going into the prison now. Some of that is becoming familiar with how things work and being aware of good and bad things that go on inside. Much like going to a foreign country, you must be aware of your surroundings. The men in white are very appreciative of the volunteers. Most of their days are spent with other inmates and correctional officers. These aren't what we experience as normal relationships. Volunteers become a connection to the real world. We help fill an important void. It's fun to share an inmate's excitement for a son that scored a winning touchdown in a high school game. There's also pain. I sat with a man when he talked to his dad for the last time before his dad died. I've prayed with men that lost other loved ones and could not attend the funeral. This is the same pain I felt when each of my parents died. The isolation of incarceration causes pain for the inmates and their families. A volunteer becomes a part of the needed support group. Now I can go just about anywhere in the prison. Many of the programs are offered in the gym. One of the classes I teach is in a housing unit with 80 men. When time allows, I'll go visit and pray with men in segregated isolation. That means praying with fingertips touching through the window of a locked door. I think it's because of this experience of loss and isolation, the men on the inside are receptive to the good news. My personal understanding of God's grace through Jesus has grown. None of us are perfect, and we all fall short. There aren't any consistent metrics for measuring recidivism. Groups involved in prison ministry all show a positive impact. The Texas Department of Criminal Justice encourages volunteers to get involved. The impact we see locally are the men who are released, get jobs, stay out of trouble, and join us with the Kairos Prison Ministry. A significant number of the Kairos volunteers are former inmates leaving productive and faithful lives in the free world. Before being involved with the prison ministry, my Christian experience could best be described as comfortable. Prison ministry has opened my eyes to the significance of Jesus. He shared a message of God's love for everyone, regardless of their status. I don't have any special religious training, and many folks know their Bible better than me. I don't think the biggest impact comes from what we say. The biggest impact is just showing up. Most volunteers will say they get involved in prison ministry because they wanted to help somebody. Several years ago, the Soul Sisters, a ladies' Bible study at Grace Presbyterian, started sending birthday cards to the men inside. It was the first birthday card for some of the men had ever received. The group had expanded their ministry to include Easter and Christmas cards. That simple ministry has a powerful impact inside. For some, it's the only mail they receive. The group is beyond excited when they receive a thank you letter from one of the men. It is literally a captive audience in prison, an audience hungry to hear and receive the good news. Angie's Babies is Mother's Day gift for Alzheimer's patients. From the womb to the tomb, you're always a mom, even if you have Alzheimer's. Giving these mothers something to nurture was the operating premise behind doll collections by two friends 4 years ago. Mary McCourt and Julie Gray met while visiting parents at the former Terrace West Nursing Home. Mary's father, Jerry, of Kermit, and Julie's grandmother, Angie, of Odessa, both suffered from Alzheimer's for more than 14 years. Angie always had a doll in her lap. Mary and Julie became the benefactors for all the patients at that hallway, and Julie eventually became a staff member at the local Alzheimer's Association office. Jerry died in 2017, and Angie followed the following year. And Mary said, "Afterwards, we were literally lost. They decided to turn their grief into something tangible, and a Mother's Day event, Angie's Babies, was born." With Mother's Day deliveries looming this year, Mary estimates they've given away several thousand dolls. For the last 2 years, they had to drop off the dolls for residents of nursing homes because of COVID restrictions. This year, the co-founders are gearing up their teams of 10 volunteers in each city to make personal presentations to ladies at Rockwood Manor, Legacy Ranch, Desert Gardens, Cimarron Place, Midland Medical Lodge, Ashton, and Manor Park's Younger Center. Staff members from nursing homes in McCamey, Crane, and Andrews will do the honors of presenting dolls to their female residents. The doll chosen for Walmart's 20-inch My Sweet Love, which costs $11, Mary said, is like a lifelike baby doll, bald and without extra paraphernalia, which could pose a choking hazard. She believes they have purchased all of Walmart's stock twice over. This year, she packed 200 in a Toyota Tundra on one trip, and she estimates that they will give away more than 500 babies thanks to their sponsors, Dan and Michelle Corrales of Pristine Organic Cleaners. If other dolls are donated, Mary says she tries to find a home for them through the Sheriff's Department or other children's charity. We'll accept new dolls of all sizes. When asked about the actual delivery, Mary recounted a year that she took her grandmothers along. She told them to hand each resident a doll, look them in the eye, wish them a happy Mother's Day, and tell them they were loved. One time, she attempted to give a doll to a woman who was sobbing in front of her two visiting daughters. The minute the resident received the doll, she stopped crying. She'd been missing her baby, the daughter said. Talk about a God moment. Another family member revealed that her mother's doll was placed inside the casket with her. A couple of years ago, Mary decided to do something for male Alzheimer's residents. She remembered how much joy her father derived from his three dogs back in the day. Research revealed that Amazon sells plush puppies to nearly every popular breed for $13. So she began a campaign to collect Jerry's puppies. She believes they will distribute 200 to 300 puppies to male residents this Father's Day. Anyone wanting to donate funds for a stuffed puppy can reach out to Angie's Baby's Facebook page before June 19th. Lest you think Mary and Julie's story is limited to 2 days in the spring each year, you'd be wrong. Mary chaired the local Walk to End Alzheimer's for 3 years and even traveled to Washington, D.C. with Julie and a group of dedicated supporters to encourage former U.S. Rep. Mike Conaway to promote legislation for Alzheimer's research. Interest in this doll and puppy project has developed in other parts of the country. To see Angie's Babies and Jerry's Puppies, or something resembling that, be replicated elsewhere, that's what makes us the happiest, Mary exclaimed. Students must meet new state graduation requirements. The school year is almost over and time is running out for seniors to fulfill the state's new graduation requirement. The Texas legislature in 2019 passed a new financial aid requirement that went into effect this school year and affects all school districts across the state. Under the rule, all students or their parents must complete either the free application for federal student aid, the Texas application for student financial aid, or sign a waiver acknowledging that they do not wish to sign either the federal or state aid form. A student will not graduate until they have completed one of these three options. Guidance counselors and administrators have worked since October 2021 to inform seniors and their families about this new graduation requirement and to help them fill out any necessary paperwork. Campuses have hosted FAFSA nights, sent messages, and have talked with seniors in person. Despite these efforts, some students and families are hesitant to fill out the forms. Here are answers to commonly asked questions we received about the new state requirement. MISD only sees whether a FAFSA or TAFSA form has been completed. MISD and your student's campus do not have any access to the personal information shared on these forms. You can sign a waiver and still fill out FAFSA and TAFSA at a later date. Either form connects students with grants and student loans that can help pay for college. Many scholarships also require the completion of either form. FAFSA and TAFSA and the waiver are available in Spanish. TAFSA was created so non-U.S. citizens in Texas can access these funding opportunities. The state requires completion of either form, no matter what a student's plans after graduation might be. If the student is 18 or older, they can fill out the waiver on their own. For students 17 and younger, a parent or guardian must fill out the waiver. A guidance counselor can also fill out the waiver, but they need to document why this is being done in good cause on behalf of the student. Per the state requirement, a student cannot graduate until at least one of the forms has been completed. Complete one of the forms as soon as possible. The state can take a few days to process the forms, and MISD cannot guarantee it will be notified in the time that your child has to meet the requirements if you wait until the last minute. You can also turn in the following documents in the student counselor as alternate proof. For FAFSA, submit a screenshot of the submission acknowledgement page or provide the financial award letter from the institution or higher institution. The same thing for TAFSA. To have your student's name included in the graduation program, the information needs to be in by May 24th. To take part in the graduation ceremony, the information needs to be in before your campus graduation rehearsal. The rehearsal schedule is as follows. 8 a.m. May 20th for Early College High School. Legacy High School, 8 p.m. May 26th. Midland High, 9 a.m. May 27th. Coleman High, 10 a.m. May 27th. The student can participate in the summer 2022 graduation ceremony if the required information is late. Contact your student's campus guidance counselor for more information. Graduation ceremonies this year are as follows. Early College High School, 7 p.m. May 20th at Midland College Shap Center. Coleman High School, May 27th, 7 p.m. at Midland College Shap Center. Midland High School, 10 a.m. May 28th at Grande Communication Stadium. Legacy High School, 8:30 p.m. May 28th at Grande Communication Stadium. Rig count at highest level in 2 years. Drilling activity continued to exceed pre-pandemic levels as the U.S. rig count surpassed 700 and is at its highest level in over 2 years. Baker Hughes said Friday, the rig count has been announcing weekly since the 1940s, rose 7 rigs to 705 for the week. The count is 257 higher than May 2021 levels. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil rose by 5 to 557. The number of rigs drilling for gas rose to 2 to 146. There are currently 57 rigs running in Appalachia. The most active operator is Chesapeake Energy. In the DJ Basin, there haven't been this many rigs running since late March of 2020. And in the Williston Basin, there are as many as 39 rigs running last week, a level last seen in early April 2020. Andres Hernandez passed away on May 1st. Visitation will take place Monday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Rosary will be at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held on Tuesday, May 10th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez Funeral Home. Charles Moody Moffett passed away on April 28th. A celebration of life will be held in the future at Manor Park along with his burial alongside his mother at Hillside Memorial Garden Cemetery in Snyder. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Jack Darden Sr. passed away on February 10th. Graveside services were held February 18th at Rust Haven Park. Jackie Roy Brunson passed away on April 25th. A celebration of life is scheduled for May 21st in Austin. Memorials to honor Jackie can be made to alivingtribute.org, which will plant a tree in the name of a charity to your choice. Lonnie Jo Short passed away on April 30th. A viewing will be held May the 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. and graveside services will be held Tuesday, May 10th at 11 a.m. in the American Heritage Cemetery. Mary Kretzler passed away on April 29th. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklum Welsh Funeral Home. Benito Avila passed away on May the 2nd. Viewing will be Tuesday, May 10th from 10 to 9 p.m. and Wednesday, May the 11th from 10 to 9 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be at Our Lady of Guadalupe on May the 12th at 10 a.m. Mary Lou Mosley passed away on May the 2nd. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 10th at Faith Tabernacle Church. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Zaire Jackson passed away on May the 1st. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 10th at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. William Austin Womack passed away on May 3rd. Tampa family will receive guests from Monday, May 9th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nappapick and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be on Tuesday, May 10th at 11:30 at First Christian Church in Midland. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nappapick and Welsh Funeral Home.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, May 7th. LNG market growth enormous. American exports to India, China, EU burgeoning exponentially. Liquefied natural gas exports are a relatively new thing in the American energy industry, and they are a very big thing. Now that nation after nation is shunning Russia as a supplier, the world is crying for the United States, Qatar, Australia, Malaysia, and other countries to make up the difference. The LNG scenario is a complex one, an extremely high dollar one, but natural gas is selling for 5 times its U.S. price in the key markets of India, China, South Korea, Japan, and the European Union. Dustin Meyer, Vice President of Natural Gas Markets for the American Petroleum Institute and Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Ed Longenecker, said American LNG exporters are selling all they can ship. The Qataris have been exporting it since the early 2000s, but it is a much more recent phenomenon here, Meyer said from Washington. We started in 2016 at LNG export terminals that were originally import terminals. Right now, we're exporting around 13 billion cubic feet per day. The United States' daily natural gas production is 95 billion cubic feet, and LNG is a rising percentage of the overall market. The European demand during this period of conflict between Russia and Ukraine is 40 billion cubic feet per day. Long range, the market is very strong. We also export 6 billion CFD via pipeline to Mexico. While natural gas was selling in the U.S. for $7.84 per 1,000 cubic feet Wednesday, because American production is so great, Meyer said overseas LNG peaked before Christmas time at $65 per MCF and now is going for $35. The domestic natural gas price was only about $3.50 per MCF from 2008 till last year, so the price is much greater here too. Having each cost from $10 billion to $20 billion to build, and with each one having taken 2.5 to 4 years to complete, only 7 export terminals are in operation. Supplied by pipelines, the terminals freeze the natural gas to 260 degrees below zero to liquefy it and then load it onto a monthly average of 100 ships, Meyer said. Weighing 45% as much as water, LNG is odorless, colorless, non-toxic, and non-corrosive. When it reaches its destinations, it is thawed out or regasified, having had the dust, acid gases, helium, water, and heavy hydrocarbons removed to make a mixture of mostly methane and a little ethane. The FERC says export terminals are under construction at Cameron Parish, Louisiana, and Sabine Pass, while 13 have been approved but are not yet being built, having survived a 3-step application process that takes 2 years with the FERC and the U.S. Department of Energy. The resources we have in this country are simply enormous, Meyer said. It's just a question if we will be allowed to build the pipelines that are necessary to support this build-out. In January, Longenecker said the U.S. topped Qatar and Australia as the world's leading exporter of LNG with 354 billion CF. America has led the world in natural gas production, surpassing Russia and Iran, thanks largely to Texas, which single-handedly accounts for roughly a quarter of U.S. natural gas production. Thanks to our prolific production, in February, Europe received nearly 70% of all exported U.S. LNG cargoes. More than 85% of the additional planned U.S. LNG export capacity will be on the Gulf Coast, and it will be largely supplied by Texas natural gas. Not only was LNG from the U.S. able to meet European demand in a time of crisis, but U.S. natural gas, when compared to Russian natural gas, is far, far cleaner. Russia's flaring intensity is 143% higher than the United States and 239% higher than the Permian basins, demonstrating that America produces natural gas in a much more sustainable fashion than other global producers. Longenecker said the annual global demand for LNG will reach 700 million metric tons, or 28 trillion CF by 2040. But America's annual exports will only increase by 65% and reach 5.86 trillion CF by 2033. In the near term, the Biden administration is pushing for increased LNG exports, but it is not enough. To truly promote American energy security and support the expansion of LNG export capacity, the administration must do more. This includes expediting permits for export facilities and pipeline infrastructure and creating a more stable regulatory environment for domestic oil and gas producers to encourage investments in these essential long-term projects. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for May 7th. Mental health beds remain statewide issue. Situation looking up in Ector County. Nearly 2 years ago, Troy Wilson was deemed incompetent to stand trial, and Judge Stacy Trotter signed an order committing the suspected serial shooter to a state mental hospital so he could get well enough to return to Ector County to be tried. He never made it. Wilson, 39, is still sitting at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. In fact, he's one of 26 criminal defendants whose criminal proceedings have ground to a halt because they are waiting for a bed at either the North Texas State Hospital in Vernon or the Big Spring State Psychiatric Hospital. Every one of the defendants whose alleged crimes range from violating a protective order on the low end up to sexual assault of a child and capital murder on the high end have been evaluated by mental health experts and found to be incompetent. In other words, because of their mental health issues, they don't understand the nature and point of the proceedings against them and they can't assist their attorneys in mounting a defense. In many cases, people can be restored to competency with the help of medications and education, but jail administrator Captain Stephen McNeil said there are currently 500 to 600 defendants who are waiting for that opportunity statewide. When the beds are available, those accused of violent crimes are sent to Vernon. The rest are sent to Big Spring. There is some hope on the horizon, however. Ector County and PermiaCare will soon be starting your own competency restoration program within the jail. Todd Luzader, the Director of Mental Health Services for PermiaCare, say they are in the process of hiring someone to head up the program, and McNeil said they hope to have the program up and running sometime within the month. PermiaCare began a pilot program in the Midland County Jail that has been very successful, Luzader said, adding that most patients have been restored to competency in under 70 days. They adopted a model used in Florida. Besides treating them for their mental health illnesses, PermiaCare staff members visit with the defendants 1 to 4 times a week, depending upon their needs, to teach them about the different roles played by people in the criminal justice system and what is expected of them in terms of helping their attorneys, Luzader said. The pilot program is being funded with a state grant, and a portion of it will pay for the Ector County program. Ector County will contribute to the cost by providing nursing staff and detention officers. At the end of the day, we're trying to make sure we're serving patients in the least restrictive place possible, Luzader said. We want to get them off the wait list and to wherever they need to be, whether it's acquitted at trial or placed on probation or sent to prison. The Ector County Jail currently has 850 inmates, with another 70 or more at other county facilities, McNeil said. Roughly 10% of them have a serious mental illness, but only 26 have been declared incompetent, McNeil said. Unofficially, Ector County Detention Center is like the largest mental health facility right now in West Texas because a lot of these people commit crimes and end up incarcerated in many cases. The family doesn't know that they're mentally ill. They just can't really put their finger on why their son or daughter or loved one is behaving that way. In some cases, they do know the diagnosis, but the person just refuses to take medication, which is also very common, and we experience that in here. We're not unique in that regard. All of his officers receive special training to deal with mentally ill defendants and to prevent suicides, McNeil said. In addition, the jail has 24-hour medical staff on hand. Psychiatrists from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and PermiaCare come in regularly and are on call. In addition, inmates have access to telehealth and telepsych services. Some of the defendants are more concerning than others because they don't all have the same types of mental illness, and some of them are being treated while they're in custody because they're willing to accept the psychiatrist's prescription medication that's needed to treat their different types of disorder, and then others refuse to believe that there's anything wrong with them. Those are the ones that tend to be more concerning and taxing on our existing resources, McNeil said. A lot of the mentally ill defendants they see at the jail have schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, schizoaffective disorder, or a major depressive disorder with psychosis. Despite what people may think, those with mental illnesses are not necessarily violent, McNeil said. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, May 7th. UTPB grad took the long road to commencement. It's been a long road, but Tyler Fuentes is poised to become one of the 607 graduates of University of Texas Permian Basin this spring. Fuentes, who is also a successful DJ, will graduate with a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering, and he earned another in math with a minor in music, also from UTPB. He made the president's honor roll by earning a 4.0 GPA while taking 27 credit hours. He will be working for Kiewit as a field engineer in Dallas-Fort Worth doing power delivery. It's less electrical engineering, and it's more the design of plants. It's more the delivery of power, Fuentes said. A military brat, Fuentes said he came to Odessa to take care of family and finish his degree. He was originally accepted at Purdue University and was on the biomedical track. My grandmother, who was like a mother to me, ended up getting ill, and my father mentioned that these could be the last few years that she had, so I wanted to make sure that I came down here to spend time with her. He had mentioned that UTPB is a good school. Coming down here and then pursuing that degree here just made me realize that I really enjoyed not only the school but the curriculum and everything about it, Fuentes said. He added that he liked the fact that the curriculum was as challenging as a big school but felt more personal. Like I said, I've been to Purdue, but I like how the professors are more personal to you. Like when you're at a large D1 university, I feel like you're just a number. But here, it's more likely that they know your face, Fuentes said. Being a DJ was a fun hobby that turned into a passion. I had always loved music, but it just really took off, and then it was like the universe just kind of opened the doors. Less than 4 months after practicing, I got offered my first job running into somebody. People heard me play, and then it was pretty much over after that. I'm blessed. I was amazed, Fuentes said.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read from the Odessa American Inside Pages, published Saturday, May 7th, 2022. High Schools Show Signs of Accomplishment by Ruth Campbell. In what has become a yearly tradition, Ector County ISD's five high schools are filling the area near their entrances with signs showing where their seniors are going. The custom started about 3 years ago during the COVID closures. The signs show the names of colleges, universities, tech schools, and military, along with certifications. At Permian High School Friday, College and career advisor Jennifer Perkins said there were probably over 200 signs being planted. "I just had to order some new stakes because we've ordered 47 new ones," Perkins said. She said 732 seniors are projected to graduate. "I think it's good for our younger kids, our freshmen and sophomores, to see this as it's creating a culture for college and careers. This isn't all just college. Our kids work hard throughout their 4 years to get certifications like cosmetology, welding, EMT, firefighting. So I think it just gives them some exposure to the possibility. That way, when they're seniors, this is something they can look forward to," Perkins said. "Kids are now starting to look forward to seeing them up every year," she added. Perkins said, "It's interesting to see all the different schools students are planning to attend across the country." She added that a lot of students are going to school in New Mexico, and many of the top 10 are going to Texas A&M University. The valedictorian, Swetha Kesavan, is going to Rice University. "We've had a lot more applicants to UTPB this year. We've got a good 126 of those students going to UTPB," Perkins said. She added that UTPB's Falcon Free program has enticed a lot of students. "The Falcon Free program will cover tuition and mandatory fees, up to 15 credit hours for the fall and spring semesters only, for first-time degree-seeking undergraduate Texas residents that have a family-adjusted gross income that does not exceed $100,000 and who are enrolled full-time, 12 hours or more each semester. This opportunity is provided until funding is exhausted," UTPB's website said. "Last year, I think we only had 86 applicants. They probably had half of those go, but they've got 126 confirmed. It's really over half of our scholarships, so it's a really great thing for UTPB," Perkins said. Isabella Garza, 17, is number 7 in her class. She said she got into 5 or 6 schools and hasn't decided which one she's going to. "I just think that's a great way for us to be recognized as seniors, and it gives us the opportunity to fully embrace where we're going to college and let everyone know. I think it's just a good transition, and it's a good way to brag about it a little bit," Garza said. Salutatorian Jonathan Martinez, 18, said he was feeling great. It was a great feeling to know that they had finally made it and accomplished everything they had worked for throughout high school. "My top two were UT and Texas A&M, so it wasn't difficult. It was a 2-month process, but I finally narrowed it down to A&M," Martinez said. Abbott appoints Midland's canon to TextNet. Governor Greg Abbott has appointed Midland's David L. Dave Cannon to the TextNet Technical Advisory Committee for a term to expire at the pleasure of the governor, a press release detailed. The committee advises the Bureau of Economic Geology on the use of funding, including the TextNet Seismic Monitoring Program and collaborative research relationships with other universities in Texas, and on the preparation of a status report to the governor and legislature. The press release details that Cannon is Senior Vice President of Geoscience and Technology for Diamondback E&P LLC. He is President-elect of the West Texas Geologic Society and a member of the Geologic Society of America, the American Rock Mechanics Association, and Society of Petroleum Engineers. Cannon also serves on the Corporate Advisory Board of the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. Additionally, he serves as a volunteer with Midland Soccer Association and Gifted Talented Education Parents Association. Cannon received a Bachelor of Science in Geology from the State University of New York College of Brockport and a Master of Sciences in Geosciences from Penn State University. City offers help with ambulance bills. The City of Odessa's Billing and Collection Department recently started a program for people who are struggling financially and having difficulty paying for ambulance services. Certain residents who were transported by Odessa Fire Rescue beginning October 1st, 2021, can ask to have their bill reduced by 25 or 50% or enroll in a payment plan for as little as $25 a month. The EMS Hardship Assistance Program will remain in effect through September 30th. Those who live in the 79761 or 79763 zip codes qualify for the program, as do those who have a credit score below 550 or live below the federal poverty income level. Interested parties can apply by calling the city at 432-335-5797. Emailing emscare@odessa-tx.gov or visiting the city's website at www.odessa-tx.gov. Register for a Texas Delivers 2050 workshop. The Texas Department of Transportation is hosting a series of in-person and virtual freight workshops to receive input from freight shippers, carriers, facility operators, and other stakeholders to help develop the 2023 Texas Freight Mobility Plan, a press release stated. To register for an in-person and virtual freight, visit tinyurl.com/3RRHBWUS. Participants will be able to provide feedback on freight flows and forecasts, freight needs and challenges, solutions and recommendations. In-person workshops include 1 to 3 p.m. May 16th, Brownsville Event Center, 1 Event Center, Brownsville, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., May 17th, 2022, TxDOT District Office Auditorium, 7600 Washington Avenue, Houston. 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., May 18th, Midland Shared Spaces, 3500 North A Street, Midland. Virtual workshops held via Microsoft Teams include 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., June 14th, Focusing on Urban Areas, bit.ly/3KIOMVM. 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. June 15th, Focusing on Rural Areas, bit.ly/3XQ6MZX. 10 a.m. to noon Central Time and 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Mountain Time, June 16th, Focusing on the Border Region, bit.ly/3RNDKSO. 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. June 17th, General Statewide Workshop, bit.ly/3JKHJOR.
This is Jane, reading for the Saturday, May 7th, Odessa American, Death Notices. Peggy Jean Alford, 87, of Odessa, died on Wednesday, May 4th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, May 10th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Public viewing will be Monday, May 9th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. LaTanya Renee Armour of Odessa, 48, died on Tuesday, May 3rd. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday, May 14th at Living Vision Church Ministries. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. The family will receive friends for visitation on Friday, May 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the funeral home. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Joanna Mata Lozano. Joanna Mata Lozano, 39, of Midland, died on Sunday, May 1st in Spring, Texas. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. on Monday, May 9th, Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Rosary precedes Mass at 7 p.m. on Sunday at Acres West. burial will be at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lonnie J. Short, 74, of Midland, died on Saturday, April 30th. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, May 10th. American Heritage. Arrangements are by American Heritage of Midland. Roy Lee King, 67, of Odessa, died on Monday, March 28th. Memorial service will be held at a private time and location, May 14th, Aguado, Puerto Rico. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Home of Odessa.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American on Sunday, May 8th. ECISD bond prop fails. Committee members say they will try again. Ector County ISD's proposed $398 million bond failed Saturday. Unofficial results show. But members of the Political Action Committee backing the measure say they will be back for another try. Results were 61.45%, or 4,786 votes, against Proposition A, and 38.55%, or 3,003 votes, in favor. On Proposition B, 64.75%, or 5,043 votes, against it, and 35.25%, or 2,746 votes, in favor. There were 7,826 votes out of 82,257, or 9.848%. After early voting came in, Lorraine Perryman, co-chair of Odessa for Education, the bond political action committee, said Saturday that they were very disappointed. The election capped off months of work by a couple of hundred people. "60 people to come up with the bond itself. We've been working on this since December of 2019 to get community input and study the needs of the district, and obviously with the voters there was an agreement with these proposals," Perryman said. "We're very disappointed. The people spoke. What I am saddest about is that tomorrow the children of Ector County do not wake up to solutions to the problem that they will face in the classroom and that we face at ECISD," Perryman said. "This is a harbinger of a difficulty for our entire region. If we don't address it for the workforce needs, then business and industry suffer as well," she added. "Our whole region is affected by this negatively, so it's very disappointing because there's such clanging of cymbals and yelling into the internet. But there were never any solutions to the problem that were offered. We need solutions for our kids, for our entire community and the entire community basin," Perryman said. She added that this is devastating to us this has occurred. Perryman said they will have to try again because the problems are still there. "I don't know when. I don't have a schedule at this point, but we have to try again," Perryman said. She added that the problems, such as overcrowding and workforce needs, are still there after Saturday's vote with no solutions. Social media also played a role. "I think it's a seismic shift in our society, the role that social media in all of its forms plays, that misinformation and negativity and character assassination can be put out there without any recourse. I think that's very negative for not just our community. I think it's negative for our whole country and our democracy, because I was raised where there was truth in the truth. There are many opinions about the truth, but there is the truth, and that is not the world in which we live in today. I find that very disturbing for not just Odessa, but for everyone. We have to agree on what the facts are and not just work with them and align with our political philosophies rather than what the truth is, because I guarantee you 100% that work that the people did in this community, we brought the facts forward. Now what happened after that is disturbing, and it's disturbing for our future," Perryman said. Committee member Lisa Wyman said to Perryman's point, she has never seen this level of ugliness in civil discourse. "We should be able to come to the table and share our thoughts and concerns and work together towards a solution. People that were invited to sit at the table got up, left, removed themselves from the process, and then at the 11th hour came out screaming and yelling. I don't understand that. That's how Odessa has worked in the past, but now it's becoming more and more of who we are, and I just think it's detrimental to anything and everything that we're trying to do to make this community great, Wyman said. Chris Cole, who co-chaired Odessans for Education, said this goes beyond a level of frustration for him. I'm really emotional about this because this was a hard fight. I've gone to these schools and I've talked to these kids and I try to paint a better picture of these students, and it's just the way these things are happening now. The way it's fought, Cole said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.